Let's go ahead and call our meeting for July 17th, regular city council meeting to order. Let's go ahead and if you're able to stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible.
Thank you all. Sheila, will you call the roll?
Ms. Buffalo? Mr. Knoth?
Here.
Ms. Wainer?
Here.
Mr. Lovelady?
Here.
Mr. Foster?
Here.
Mr. Waterman?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Thank you, guys. Tonight, the public has the opportunity to speak on several items during the public hearing, old business and new business portions of the agenda. We ask that when you're commenting during these portions, that comments are kept to the legislation that's being discussed. And at the end of the meeting, we have general comments on anything that was already discussed on the agenda or any other topic. You will be given 3 minutes as an individual and may request five if you are representing an organization affected by the item. Only one speaker for each organization will be allowed 5 minutes. Please respect those time limits so that everyone has the opportunity to speak. There is opportunity for disagreement tonight, as always. I ask that you not applaud, snap, boo, or do any other demonstrative actions that could intimidate someone who wants to speak this evening. You also may not attack people. You can disagree on topics, issues, but we show respect for each other here. Work an issue, not a person. If you do interrupt the meeting or yell from the audience, I will give you a warning to stop. If it continues, you will be asked to leave the building and we will take a 5-minute recess. So now that the mom talk is out of the way, let's go ahead and get started. First, let's do our minutes. Sheila, we do the minutes first still. Okay. Do I have a motion and a second for the regular June 20 meeting minutes that Sheila submitted?
So moved.
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. And then I'll entertain a motion and a second for the June 6, 2022 and June 21st, 2022 regular meeting minutes. This is being requested to be approved because the city clerk is behind in meeting minutes and is catching up valiantly.
So moved.
Second.
All approved? Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, fabulous. Looking at the agenda, does anybody have any changes to the agenda that we need to make? That was it, yeah? Okay, no changes to the minutes, fabulous. Well, we'll move on to our...
Let's approve the agenda.
Yes, thank you. I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
Roy approves in seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No, okay. So we'll go ahead and move on to our special item on our agenda, which is a resolution of appreciation for Police Chief Jeff Jones. So Jeff, if you'll join us at the podium. Read this awkwardly. It's going to be great. Okay, whereas Jeffrey Jones first became involved with the City of Columbia Police Department as police cadet 15 years ago, or I'm sorry, at 15 years of age, while attending Rockbridge High School. Whereas Jeffrey Jones began his permanent employment with the City of Columbia on November 30th, 1998, as a police officer, and was promoted to police sergeant on October 18th, 2009, to police lieutenant on November 6, 2012, and to police chief on September 8, 2019, after serving as acting police chief for approximately 7 months. And whereas Jeffrey Jones will retire from employment with the City of Columbia on August 1, 2023, where after almost 25 years of public service, he has made a significant contribution to the well-being of the thousands of residents in this community. And whereas it is the desire of the mayor and the council to recognize and thank Jeff Jones for his service and assistance to this and former councils. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the city council extends its heartfelt thanks to Chief Jones for his dedication, public service, and commitment to keeping Columbia a viable city. We wish Chief Jones much joy, happiness, and good health in his retirement. Thank you all for that. We are going to move on to the next part of our agenda where we're focusing on appointments to boards and commissions. There are many opportunities to serve your community, including serving on one of our boards and commissions. Check our website. There are always lots of opportunities to put your name in the hat. So first off, we have the Bicycle and Pedestrian Commission. If we're agreeable, both applicants can be appointed by voice vote, which is Detlef Ritter and Meg Ross.
That would be good.
Any opposed? We're good. Next, we have our Building Construction Codes Commission, and if agreeable, all five applicants can be appointed by voice vote. So we have Brian Connell, Jonathan Trunk, Jay Creasy, Christopher Howe, and Richard Shanker. If you're supportive of that, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Next, we have the Commission on Cultural Affairs Standing Committee on Public Art. If agreeable, Sarah Bull can be appointed by voice vote. Any objections to Sarah Bull?
No objections.
No objections.
All right. Next, we have our Housing and Community Development Commission. Let me pull this up here. We have two applicants and one vacancy. Sheila, will you go ahead and call the roll for the Housing and Community Development Commission?
Mr. Knoth?
Erica Pfefferman.
Ms. Weiner?
Erica Pfefferman.
Mr. Lovelady?
Erica Pfefferman.
Mr. Foster?
Erica Pfefferman.
Mr. Waterman?
Michelle Mayer.
And Ms. Peters?
Erica Pfefferman.
We're good.
Yep.
And then next we have our Public Transit Advisory Commission, and we have one opening and one applicant. And so if you all are agreeable, we will appoint Sarah Johnson to serve on PTAC. Any objections?
No objections.
No objection.
And we don't have any scheduled public comment tonight. I don't think I realized that.
I was surprised.
We're just flying. Okay, so let's move on to the public hearings portion of our agenda. Sheila, can you read public hearing 2623, Bill 14523, 14623, and 14723?
Public hearing 2623 is a proposed construction and repair of sidewalks and replacement of curb ramps along portions of Rollins Street, Burnham Avenue, Kentucky Boulevard, Curtis Avenue, Richmond Avenue, and Tiger Avenue. Council Bill 14523 is an ordinance authorizing a cost allocation agreement with the curators of the University of Missouri for construction and repair of sidewalks and replacement of curb ramps along portions of Rollins Street, Burnham Avenue, Kentucky Boulevard, Curtis Avenue, Richmond Avenue, and Tiger Avenue, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading. Council Bill 14623 is an ordinance determining it is in the public interest to construct and repair sidewalks and replace curb ramps along portions of Rollins Street, Burnham Avenue, Kentucky Boulevard, Curtis Avenue, Richmond Avenue, and Tiger Avenue, approving and adopting plans and specifications, determining that the work shall be done by contract, calling for bids through the purchasing division, providing for payment for the improvement, authorizing the city manager to obtain, execute, and record all documents necessary for the improvement, providing for compliance with the prevailing wage law and state mandated construction safety training, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading. And Council Bill 14723 is an ordinance accepting conveyances for temporary construction and sidewalk purposes related to the construction and repair of sidewalks and replacement of curb ramps along portions of Rollins Street, Burnham Avenue, Kentucky Boulevard, Curtis Avenue, Richmond Avenue, and Tiger Avenue, directing the city clerk to have the conveyances recorded and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Have anything else you want to add to that, Sheila?
Yes.
No? Okay. Do we have a staff report?
Yes. Good evening. My name is Shane Creech, and I'm the Public Works Director. This project will construct new sidewalk, repair existing sidewalk, and replace curb ramps in an area commonly referred to as Greektown near the University of Missouri campus. The project includes work along Tiger, Richmond, Curtis, Rollins, Burnham, and Kentucky. Curtis currently has a sidewalk gap that's being filled in with this project. All new sidewalks will be 5 feet wide, unless along the back of curb where they'll be 6 foot wide. The University of Missouri's Fraternity and Sorority Life approached the city with a cost share proposal at the November 1st, 2021 council meeting. Due to the large amount of pedestrian traffic in this area, Public Works was also highly interested in this collaboration. Staff held an interested parties meeting at the August 10th, 2023 on August 10th, 2023. The estimated total project cost is $334,000, and the project will be funded through a 50-50 cost share between the city and the university. The city's portion will be funded with the city's quarter cent capital improvement program sales tax. The easements necessary for the project have been donated. Construction of the project is anticipated to begin in the summer of 2024. Following the public hearing on the agenda is the cost share agreement with MU, the bid call ordinance, and the easement acceptance for this project. Allison Anderson, the department's engineering supervisor over design, is with me tonight, and we're happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for staff? Okay. Well, we can open the public hearing. If you would like to speak on this issue, go ahead and make your way to the mic. Good evening.
Hello, everyone. My name is Chris Jefferson. I serve as Director of Fraternity Sorority Life at the University of Missouri. Just want to sincerely thank you all for your support of this initiative and the collaboration. Our students are excited about this initiative and look forward to this project. So thank you again for your consideration.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, we'll go ahead and close it. Any council comment that came up for you in that 30 seconds? Dr. Peters.
My only comment is I remember listening to, I believe it was several sorority women who showed up to speak to this, like either last year or the year before. And I'm pleased to see that we're able to go forward with that, because when they originally showed up and were detailing this, I'm thinking this is not going to work well. But I'm wrong. I'm happy to be wrong. So thank you that we're able to move forward with this.
Any other council comments? Okay, Sheila, will you call the roll on B-145-23, 146-23, and 147-23 individually?
Okay, Council Bill 145-23, Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Council Bill 146-23, Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
And Council Bill 147-23, Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Wonderful. Next item on our agenda, Sheila, can you read Public Hearing 2723, please?
Public Hearing 2723 is the consideration of the Water and Light 2023 Renewable Energy Plan.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. David Sorrell, Director of Utilities, with me tonight is Brandon Renaud. He's the Utility Services Manager for the utility. And this is the public hearing for the 2023 Renewable Energy Plan. The ordinance requires us to submit a plan that tries to explain how we intend to approach meeting the goals for renewable energy that's included in the ordinance each year. We have to publish this in January. And then we don't get final true-up numbers from our past performance for 2022 until end of March, beginning of April. We update it. We take it to the Climate and Environment Commission and the Water and Light Advisory Board. We've done that with this plan. They did not have any formal written comments regarding it. Anyway, we do this each year. But with that, I'm going to let Brandon give you a brief presentation that summarizes the plan.
Good evening. The Renewable Energy Standard was adopted by voters in 2004 and amended by Council in 2014 to increase renewable energy amounts to our current standard. In 2022, we had a goal of 15% renewable energy. This threshold increases in 2023 to 25% and again to 30% in 2029. This slide shows Water and Light's recent progress on renewable energy. In 2022, Water and Light had 18.15% renewable energy exceeding the 15% threshold. Of the 18%, 12.9% was from wind, 2.9% was from landfill gas, and 2.3% was from solar energy. From 2021 to 2022, the total amount of renewable energy increased by over 51,000 megawatt hours, or a 29% increase year over year. We anticipate continued growth in 2023 with over 20% over 20% with the completion of the expansion of the Crystal Lake Wind Agreement. This will now provide Columbia Water and Light the total 66 megawatts of wind from this site. Depending on Columbia Water and Light's load and renewable energy production, we anticipate providing between 20 and 25% renewable energy in 2023. Projected shortfall in 2023 is a result of delays of the delivery of the Iron Star Wind and Grain Belt Express transmission line, as well as the loss of the Boone Stevens Solar Farm due to increased cost last year. Cost for renewable energy has been increasing for a number of years. The cost in 2022 was considerably higher than recent years. This was mostly due to congestion on the grid. The cost for 2022 was $6.3 million, which has increased from $3.6 million in 2021. Congestion on the grid, it impacted energy prices, resulting in higher costs for water and light. The volatility was created by several events, including outages from resources located near water and light, and weather events putting pressure on resources on an already strained transmission system. The resulting impact of the congestion is that water and light's cost for wind from the Crystal Lake Wind Farm increased significantly in 2022, with costs for one contract increasing from approximately $24 per megawatt hour to over $42 per megawatt hour year over year. Although costs related to congestion have increased over the last several years, through the first 6 months of 2023, costs related to congestion have fallen back near the 2021 cost per megawatt hour. So those costs have come down in the current year accounting for. On a longer time horizon, MISO, our independent system operator, is currently proposing improvements to the transmission system and the grid through their long-term transmission planning process. This plan specifically targets Missouri for a transmission project that will address congestion and improve reliability through the late 2020s. The renewable energy standard mandates renewable energy be integrated into Columbia Water and Light's electric portfolio without increasing rates more than 3% above the cost of what non-renewable energy would be. The 3% limit for 2022 was $3.97 million. Total cost for renewables in 2022 was $6.3 million. This is a 4.75 impact on electric rates. This is related to the congestion costs mentioned in the last slide. And again, while the congestion costs are still impacting the cost for these contracts, these costs have returned to the near 2021 levels, and the utility continues to monitor these costs on a regular basis. This slide shows a projected growth of renewable energy as described in the 2023 Renewable Energy Plan. A driving factor of our short-term growth, the RFP for renewable energy that was released in 2022, was scheduled for the energy to come online in 2024. Unfortunately, the additional costs for renewable energy based on the responses to this RFP, they were cost prohibitive. The resulting impact of accepting the lowest bid from that RFP would have been a significant electric rate increase. We opted to not accept any of those bids.
I had the wrong chart up there. I apologize. This is the one that he's describing right now.
The blue line tracks the chart of what our expected results were when this report was written at the beginning of this year. The draft was submitted in January of 2023. There we are. The revised chart shows our renewable energy production through 2032, excluding the anticipated renewable energy from the recent RFP. This chart reflects only our current contracts as they are today. The result is a projected shortfall from 2023 through 2026, with production exceeding the threshold from 27 and 28. This chart does not reflect the expansion of our agreement with Missouri Electric Commission for an additional 18 megawatts of wind from the Grain Belt Express, or any future renewable RFPs that may go out. Now, looking forward, we are seeking to expand renewables. And the way that we want to do this is an informed way. We want to make sure that we do it in a cost-effective way. The Energy Authority was asked to do an evaluation last year studying impacts of going to 100% renewable energy in Columbia Water and Light. That report was presented to the Water and Light Advisory Board on July 10th. The study evaluated financial impacts of achieving 100% renewables, including considerations for renewable energy credits, thermal resource divestment, essentially if we were to get out of our thermal coal contracts, and early retirement of any of those resources. Options in this report include paths to expanding renewables, including specific purchase power dates and plans through 2043, as well as projected total cost for each option. With the completion of the study, staff is working with the Water and Light Advisory Board to review options and assess potential outcomes. Water and Light Advisory Board will be providing a summary to Council at an upcoming meeting and outlining potential next steps and seeking guidance and input from Council on a direction for Water and Light. Once Council has weighed in, staff will be able to begin developing a plan to meet Council's desired goals, which will include evaluation of our current ordinances, as well as recent federal funding opportunities to promote renewable growth, both for the city and for our stakeholders. While the 100% renewable options are being evaluated, progress has continued on the expansion of renewables otherwise. In the last year, the expansion of the landfill gas generator site to include a fourth generator has been underway. This generator will allow Columbia Water and Light the redundancy and the flexibility necessary at this site to ensure that we can continue to provide consistent renewable energy from our landfill. Utility staff has notified, as I mentioned, the Missouri Electric Commission of our interest in expanding our takeoff from Iron Star Grain Belt Express transmission line. We've requested up to an additional 18 megawatts for delivery in 2027, which would bring our total potential purchase to 53 megawatts of wind at that time from that site. On a more of a local level, Water and Light has been working with the Columbia Housing Authority. In recent years, we've been trying to find ways to promote adoption of renewable energy to all aspects of our community. In recent years, this has resulted in an agreement and a partnership between the city and the Housing Authority for funding a portion of renewable energy to be installed on the Kenny Point Townhouse Project, as well as funding a portion of the solar energy that will be hopefully installed at the Kenny Point Resource Center. That's part of the budget adoption process that you'll see coming forward in the next few months. In addition, in the upcoming FY24 budget, the utilities has increased solar rebate funding by $100,000. This is in response to a large demand from customers for installing solar on their houses seeking rebate money from the city. So we've sought to increase that rebate amount to meet that current demand. Additionally, later this year, you will see a community solar program brought forth. This program seeks to promote awareness and access to solar energy throughout the community. But you'll hear more on that this fall. And lastly, Water and Light is currently undertaking a utility-scale battery storage study that will evaluate the possibility and the potential for adding battery storage to our grid. This evaluation will consider the possibilities for renewable capacity credits, potential locations with benefits for where a battery could be installed on our grid, increased reliability, and a potential grid backup that would not rely on fossil fuel resources. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have, or Dave as well.
Any council questions?
I'm very happy to hear about, you know, consideration about enabling, you know, more pathways for all of our residents to gain access to solar opportunities. Do you have any examples of kind of things you guys have in mind? I know you're early in that process, or what other cities are doing in that regard?
A couple things I could speak to right now is that our community solar program will have a 15% carve out for income qualifying customers. And not to give away the whole sell for later this fall, but the plan would be to have a revolving type of program that for a 12-month cycle, potentially, customers would be in this program. And because it's a limited space, those customers would roll off and new customers would roll in. This would allow us time to work with those customers to encourage efficiency projects at their house to help reduce their cost otherwise. At the same time, Utilities is looking to partner and is partnering with the Sustainability Office looking at greenhouse gas reduction funding opportunities through the IRA, Investment Reduction Act, as far as a solar program for all, which includes funding to increase access for renewable energy for low-income communities. Those are things that we're currently evaluating. Nothing is set in stone, but things that we're trying to get ahead of the curve, mm-hmm. essentially.
Glad to hear it. Thank you.
Foster?
The solar for all in the community, solar, are those really the same thing? You're looking at, no.
I don't have specific information on what the solar for all would look. That is a grant process right. that's recently been announced by the federal government. And the community solar program is 100% an internal process that we have designed with our local solar fields that would allow customers the benefit of that solar production on their actual physical utility bill.
Okay. Can I ask you to go back and look at, I think it's the slide, that one. I did ask about this one, and I just think it'd be good for the public to hear. There's a drop-off after 2028 in terms of what we look at future renewables, which is the opposite direction I would guess we would want to see that go. But I understand that the reason for that is we simply haven't planned out beyond that at this point. But that's part of the process you're talking about with TEA and so forth to identify and then access those other sources for renewable in the near future and ongoing, right?
Absolutely. The Ameresco, the Jeff City landfill agreement ends in 2029, and our Bluegrass Ridge wind contract ends in 2027. At the same time, the contracts that have been put in place have mostly been designed to reach the current ordinance, which caps out at 30%. So historically not trying to overbuy, but also meet city goals, being aware at the same time that there's a vision of a greater access to renewables in the community. So I think what we're looking at, when you see that decline, is those two contracts sunsetting. At the same time, if we do not bring on new renewables and our load continues to grow, that percentage drops each year. I think that's also what you're seeing in that chart.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Waterman.
A couple of questions, and because of my newness, I apologize, but what was the rationale for reason behind capping the growth or the rate increases at 3%?
I can answer that, I think. That whole renewable energy thing came through an initiative petition process originally, and as part of that initiative petition, I believe that 3% cap was in that initiative petition, which was voted on by the citizens and passed and all that. That's my recollection.
Okay, thank you. And correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't in the written report that was attached to the agenda consideration of possibly seeing about removing that given the increase and the fact that, again, if I'm understanding this correctly, that we're going to be then subsidizing the renewables to a degree. Is that correct?
In this report, there's no mention of removing or eliminating the 3% cap. There has been discussion of that within different commissions. Evaluating the cost for renewables as well as local impacts, but I could not speak to that further. That's still at a committee or a commission level.
Okay. And then lastly, in talking about the community, thought just occurred to me over the weekend, has there been any discussion with coordinating with Parks and Rec, because I know we're trying to, you know, expand parks and in the park spaces, putting, I don't know, a vertical wind turbine or solar panel of some kind that's above, you know, so kind of a dual purpose, and that to work us towards renewables, giving us the green space that we all want. So
it's funny that you mentioned, we even had a discussion today related to what are our options for expanding locally, whether it's small scale, whether, you know, a parking structure or a wind turbine. And I think that as we move forward with that 100% renewable study, that comes with specific dates and capacity and energy requirements that we will need in those years. And once we set in stone what we're looking for in each of those years, it will be easier for the utility to have local and regional partnerships to identify projects to expand renewables in more of a visual way around the community.
Okay, thank you.
Other council questions? I have some from Barbara that she left us. I'll just start with the first one. What's our plan for using local generation to meet our goals?
So currently we have the landfill gas project that's expanding. We are expanding our funding opportunities for rebates for local distributed solar for customers, partnering with income qualifying organizations locally here as well. And again, as that report is finalized and council helps us to decide what the best path forward is and what the cost implications are, and everyone has a full understanding of that, I think we'll have a better opportunity to look at a local generation as far as what is the need versus what is the cost and what is the benefit.
Will that report also tackle how we're going to take advantage of the Inflation Reduction Act?
It will, yes.
Okay, fabulous. She received a direct question from the Boone County Commission. How are we reaching out to other large users in our service area to see what we can partner on to generate renewable energy?
Could you clarify if it was our customers or if it was other utilities?
Said large users in our service area.
We're regularly in contact with our industrial, or with all of our commercial customers, but specifically our larger industrial customers that have the capacity to make that type of investment. We know that recently there has been discussions at that level. They've run into the same type of issues that we have as far as cost for those installations. There's definitely interest. Those organizations, those businesses have renewables goals. They have sustainability goals, and that's something that we are aware of, and we try to partner with them so that we can leverage our funds together.
Thank you. And the last question, and you may have mentioned this earlier and I missed it. When do we expect the consultant's report to be complete and presented to council?
It is complete.
Well, after we presented to the Water Night Advisory Board on July 10th, we need to take the costs that were in the report with scenarios that are the most feasible, and then say following the timelines and this and that, these are the impacts to the rates. They want to see that. So we're going to calculate that, take it back to them, and then we'll bring it back to the council.
Thank you.
I would think we would get it to them not at their August meeting, but September.
Got it. Any other council questions? Okay, I will open the public hearing for public hearing 2723. If you have an interest, please come up to the podium. Hello, Chris.
Hiya. Chris Jones, Second Ward. So I want to make a comment on something that was said towards the end. I hope that the consultant that will be coming up and consulting later in the year is not the same consultant that advised you guys to raise rates on poor people while saying that rich people, higher users, are carrying the load, are being taken advantage of, blah, 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 by poor people. That consultant was very tone deaf. I hope that you got from the community, because I know there was a lot of outrage in the community about how bad that consultant was. So please be advised in the future to not use that consultant. Thank you.
Any other public comment? Okay, well, we will close the public hearing. Council, do you have any additional comments? Okay, I'd entertain a motion for this if anybody's interested.
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
And all in favor to accept the Water and Light 2023 Renewable Energy Plan, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Moving on to old business. Sheila, can you read B-142-23, 143-23, and 144-23?
Yes. Council Bill 142-23 is an ordinance amending Chapter 13 of the City Code to establish business license regulations for micro business marijuana facilities and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading. Council Bill 143-23 is an ordinance amending Chapter 29 of the City Code to establish microbusiness marijuana regulations and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading. And Council Bill 144-23 is an ordinance amending Chapter 16 of the City Code to establish new regulations for the adult use of marijuana and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report?
I think I'm going to kick this one off, right? I've got my partners in crime or
the squad
at the table. But this is coming to you as a result of Amendment 3 to the Constitution that was enacted by the voters. And so it has three prongs tonight. We have in, and I'm going to take them a little bit out of, in a little bit different order than what is on the agenda. We're going to start with Chapter 29, which is zoning, which will set forth where the micro business marijuana facilities can be located. The then Chapter 13, which is business licensing, which is that next technical piece for being allowed to operate a business in the city. First, you got to have a location, then you have to have a license. And then lastly, Chapter 16 is the piece that has to do with offenses. And we have not yet updated our code for offenses since Amendment 3 went in. So this is, it's really time to make that happen. So starting off with the Chapter 29 amendments, what we do is we have taken the exact criteria that were applied to all of the other marijuana facilities and are adding a definition for a micro business marijuana dispensary facility and adding a definition for a micro business marijuana wholesale facility, which are the two new types that are being rolled out by the Department of Health and Human Services under the constitutional amendment. And other than that, and adding those definitions and providing for those in the zoning code, there are no additional changes that are being made. So the micro business facilities would be able to be located in the same locations as the current marijuana facilities. And I'm gonna back up just kind of briefly and explain what a micro business is. Sorry. I jumped way ahead because that's really what we're dealing with tonight, are the micro business. But according to the Department of Health and Senior Services, the purpose behind the marijuana micro business licenses is to allow small businesses entry into the market. And they're designed to allow marginalized or underrepresented individuals to participate in the legal marijuana market. And one of the key attributes is that their ownership is restricted to individuals who meet one of how many qualifications is it? Eight qualifications, I think. Five different categories. But then there are some subcategories and some other ways that you can come into qualification. And I don't know if are you interested in knowing what those are? Do you want the specifics on what those categories are for the micro business? Okay, I can go through those. So in order to qualify, and all of these are actually, all of the licenses are issued by the state, and the state is currently accepting applications. You have to have a net worth of less than $250,000 and have had an income below 250% of the federal poverty level. Or, and these are all ors, so you can meet the criteria in any one of these ways, or have had a valid service-connected disability card issued by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs or its successor agency. Or you can be a person who has been, or a person whose parent, guardian, or spouse has been arrested for, prosecuted for, or convicted of a nonviolent marijuana offense, except for any conviction that would have involved provision of marijuana to a minor or a conviction of driving under the influence. And that arrest, charge, or conviction must have occurred at least 1 year prior to the effective date of the amendment. Or you may reside in a zip code or census tract where 30% or more of the population lives below the federal poverty level, or the rate of unemployment is 50% higher than the state average of unemployment, or the historic rate of incarceration for marijuana-related offenses is 50% higher than the rate for the entire state. And last but not least, or graduated from a school district that was unaccredited or had a similar successor designation at the time of graduation, or you may live in a zip code containing an unaccredited school district or similar successor designation for the past 5 years. So there are a lot of subcategories in there, but the real intent is to provide opportunities to marginalized communities, is what I understand. over the next 3 years, the state will be licensing two micro business dispensary licenses per congressional district. Then there are also four cultivation licenses per congressional district. So there's a total of six licenses that will come out for micro businesses. The cultivation licenses are limited to 250 plants at any particular point in time. A dispensary, a micro business dispensary, must purchase its products from a micro business wholesale cultivation facility. So it's intended to be integrated from top to bottom in the micro business market. So there's this crossover between the larger businesses. So all that said, that's a micro business, and those get licensed by the state of Missouri, and they will come here. One of the things that we did not do for the micro business that you did see with regard to the original licensing for the comprehensive facilities and the medical marijuana, when the medical marijuana initially came out, was we limited the number of licenses for medical marijuana to seven within our portion of the congressional district, in order to ensure that the city of Columbia, all of those facilities were not located in the city of Columbia, but they were actually spread throughout the community to be able to provide the medical resources to folks who needed them throughout our congressional district. So that was the idea behind that. You don't have those kinds of restrictions on the micro business. There are only two issued each year. You'll have a total of six unless that number gets authorized to grow in the future, which it could. Okay, that said, zoning, yes.
Can I ask you a question that pertains to what you were just saying?
Absolutely.
In the ordinance for Chapter 29 on page 3, they talk about limited to one per 20,000 population. Is that related to what you just said?
That is related to the medical. It is not related to the micro.
Right. And that's what I was going to point out, is it said medical and comprehensive, but there wasn't micro business there. And I didn't know if that was intentional.
That is intentional.
Okay.
Yes, that is intentional.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions regarding zoning at this point? Business licensing. Again, with the business licensing, we've added the definitions into business licensing. And the only other change you will see is that there is a $2,000 application fee for the comprehensive and the medical. For the micro businesses, we're recommending that fee be reduced to $1,000 in order to ensure that, you know, there is not undue burden on the applicants for the communities that are trying to be enticed to come forward with these businesses. Chapter 16 is a little bit more comprehensive. As you might recall, I believe it was in 2004, we had the voters approve an initiative petition. Is that right, 2004? I'm looking for some help in the audience. Thank you.
Yes, it was 2004.
Yes.
That was my first initiative petition. That was in renewable energy.
And Dan Beetz is here. He's in the audience as well and helped spearhead that. So I was looking to him and he gave me the thumbs up as well. So in 2004, we had the voters in Columbia, in a very progressive fashion, really adopted our own version of medical marijuana. With the advent of Amendment 3, those provisions are really no longer necessary. So what this particular provision to Chapter 16 does is it repeals those provisions, but enacts in lieu thereof all of the provisions and protections that have been put into place under Amendment 3. It will legalize the adult possession and use of up to 3 ounces of marijuana, along with the cultivation of a limited number of marijuana plants and other activities that were previously unlawful in the city. And then it obviously legalizes the possession and consumption of marijuana for persons who are under 21 years of age. I'm sorry, for people who are over 21 years of age, or 21 years of age and older.
Plus, we're real progressive.
So, I mean, that is, in a nutshell, that's what you have before you tonight. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. We do have a director of finance here to answer any questions on the business licensing and your director of community development for the zoning code.
Questions? Mr. Knuth?
I was curious, in there, you talked about, was it a $1,000 application fee?
Yes.
Where's that number come from? Is that just arbitrary, or is that representative of what it costs us to handle it, or what's that number based on?
We put some time and effort into those. What we did is we knew that the 2,000 was what was put forward for the medical and the comprehensive, and then reduced that in half.
Also, the state charged 1,500, and we didn't want to be there, so we stepped it down from what the state charge was.
So is it, and I'm assuming it's not, but I mean, is a decent amount of that just arbitrary, that we can charge that, so we are?
I don't know if it's arbitrary, but yes, we.
And I ask this because obviously this is, you know, the definition we're talking about, micro businesses, is for underserved communities who are trying to, you know, start a business. And I'm just concerned, right? Another $1,000 on top of everything else, I imagine, whether it's for this type of business or anything, it's a heavy lift, right? And so I'm just curious if there's any wiggle room on that. This seems like the place to wiggle it.
I think you could reduce that if you wanted to reduce that number. I don't know exactly how much time has to go into issuance of those and monitoring of those licenses. There are some inspections that we have, and they're fairly significant inspections of the facilities. I don't think that your $1,000 is probably going to cover that, but it doesn't mean that you can't supplement that through some of your other application fees that you've had. So certainly it's something that could be reduced.
I mean, I'm open to that. I don't know if my fellow council members.
I'm open to it.
But I have another question.
And
too.
So did Betsy, yeah.
Okay, we so we'll back. Put a pin in that. We'll yep. come back to that. Yep. Go ahead, Nick. Other Nick.
Well, now I'm Other Nick. My question follows along with what Nick Knuth said. I'm wondering about the size of these businesses. Micro business seems to define it as small. So is it accurate to say these are smaller businesses related to, compared to the other marijuana businesses? And is there a way to measure that, quantify that?
I think the way that you have to quantify that is that they are only able to purchase their products from a wholesale business, and the four wholesale businesses that are authorized in each congressional district are limited to 250 plants. And so as a matter of course, there will be limited product available for sale in each of the facilities. I mean, I guess you could have one mega micro business that buys up all the product, but I don't believe that's really the intent or the idea behind the legislation.
But an established dispensary is not going to have those limitations, I guess.
Correct.
And then what's the cost for a business license for one of those?
$2,500.
It's $2,500. And the state, you said, is setting this one at $1,500. Is that it?
I'm sorry, it's $2,000.
It's 2,000 for us.
It's 2,000 for us. I'm sorry, I misspoke.
Okay. So the micro state has referring to more of less of the business size and more of the industry right. It's operating within.
Correct. So under the state, in order for the comprehensive licenses for medical and comprehensive, they actually charged a $10,000 application fee. Plus a $2,500 annual fee, I believe. I'm not positive on that annual fee, but it was an initial $10,000, and it was non-refundable. And for the micro business, what the state is doing is a $1,500 application fee that is, in fact, refundable if they don't get the license. They are going to be issuing their licenses by lottery beginning October 1, I believe.
Okay, thanks.
That makes sense.
Other council question? Dr. Peters, did you have one? Okay, good for public comment, and then we can circle back to. Okay, let's open the public hearing. It's not a public hearing. Anybody from the public who'd like to speak on this issue, please go ahead and approach the mic.
Thank you. I'm Dan Beats, 15 North 10th Street. I was the primary drafter of the ordinances that these ordinances propose to repeal. And I was one of several people who contributed to the drafting of Article 14, both Section 1, the medical provisions passed in 2018, and Section 2, the adult use non-medical provisions passed by the voters in 2022. I want to compliment Nancy for her knowledge of these laws. It's really very good. The state's not actually accepting applications yet for micros, but they will on July 27 and for a period of 2 weeks through August 10. And so it's certainly appropriate for the council to approach this, but I just want to say again, as I have in the past, that I should do more to keep up with city business, I guess, but if I hadn't happened to see a news report about this being on the agenda tonight, I would have known about it. There's not been a lot of opportunity for public input here, or for input from the folks involved in the writing and the passage of these laws. And I want to say I'm always available. I'm not hard to find. I'd be happy to help if I can anytime that there's ordinances on these topics being considered. You know, it is appropriate. I'm not arguing against repeal of the ordinances that we worked very hard to pass back in 2004. And the state should do likewise. Frankly, the state hasn't lifted a finger yet to repeal the state laws that conflict with Article 14. But of course, those laws are rendered moot and ineffective by the passage of Article 14. I haven't had a lot of time to study what's being proposed this evening, but I was struck by one matter which I understand is currently part of the laws that affect the operation of both medical and adult use facilities, and that is the hours of operation. They limit the hours of operation to 10 p.m., and it seems to me that's an unnecessary restriction. We have dozens, maybe hundreds, of liquor purveyors in this town who sell their wares until 1:30 every morning, and I don't think there's any need to cut off marijuana sales at 10 p.m. That may not be a major issue, but it could be an issue. And one that I think deserves a little more consideration. I was very opposed to the last council's machinations, which were clearly intended to prevent any cannabis facility from locating in downtown Columbia. I think it's ironic that the voters who supported the passage of these laws were most numerous in the downtown area. It is the folks who live and work in downtown Columbia who were most in support of these laws, and yet the council has, with the staff's encouragement, excluded any such facility from downtown Columbia. I suggest there's really no reason for that. There's no need to do that. But at any rate, the other point that has occurred to me upon a first quick skim of what's proposed here is that it limits personal cultivation to the individual's residence. And I'm not certain, because I haven't had time to review it, whether the state law does that or not. It's not quite in the same wording at any rate. And I do caution you that enacting anything more restrictive than Article 14 will likely be held unconstitutional if challenged. But at any rate, I'll stop. I'll be glad to respond to any questions or not. Thank you.
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Rangeline. I don't know if I've ever mentioned it, but one day I went to college and it was not probably within that first week, I couldn't stand the smell of something. So it's 50 years later. We have Route B where we produce this industry, and every time you drive by, you have to smell a skunk. So I decided to go talk to the gentleman that made $1 million very quickly after putting up apparently the $10,000 that's been spoken. I didn't know none of these details, but I did learn of the million. The point is, do we have regulations when walking into the business, any one of these businesses? Are we supposed to be allowing participation of the substance behind the door of the selling business? I think that needs to be brought out. Nick made a point that, what about square footage? How big is the small man's square footage compared to the other gentleman? It might be doing quite well, but is there any regulation on square footage as well as participating in the use of this while inside the business? We do know it works just a little bit like alcohol. It affects a lot of decision making, and we need to be careful. Appreciate that somebody could answer these questions.
Any other public comment? All right, seeing none, we can move to council comments.
Yeah, just wanted to circle back to the point I just made 5 minutes ago. curious, again, I'll ask just to be clear, you know, is there any concern about this? You know, you said that the 1,000 probably isn't even representative of the, you know, overhead, let's say, that goes into it. But is there any concern either from staff or council about lowering that threshold to further enable these micro businesses to potentially prosper?
I definitely wouldn't mind lowering. The reason I would say lower is because, for one, you have two micro businesses and then you have four. At any given moment, any of those businesses can only produce 250 plants. Plants don't sprout up overnight, so it's going to take time, which kind of caps those micro businesses' revenue. So I definitely don't see them making as much money, and they're in competition already with the bigger businesses. So I wouldn't mind bringing the application rate down.
Mr. Waterman.
Regarding the price of the license, how does that compare to, let's say, I wanted to open a facility or open an establishment selling coffee? What would be my price for that, for the business license?
You would have to pay for your all the normal inspections, and then the business license. Is it off of the potential sales? Off the potential sales of the company.
Okay, so it could vary. It could be more or less. I guess then my question would be, why didn't we adopt something similar to that for this?
Because of the way the state brought the law about, it's not looked at the same.
Not looked at the same.
Yes.
Okay.
Because of the nature of the business?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So other businesses operate off of a gross receipts tax as a part business license tax. Mm. So it's really based on your gross receipts, a kind of a flat fee plus.
What is that flat fee?
Oh.
We start out at, I believe, $50, and then it moves up from there, depending on the size. And $50, I believe, is like $25,000 or less. Gross receipts.
And I will add that, you know, in this particular industry, there is the 3% tax that is added on. We do have the sales tax on those that are retail. Now, the medical marijuana does not have a sales tax, and both the microbusiness does have both medical and retail sales as well.
Dr. Peters.
I guess I'm just confused in general about a couple of things. The business like we cannot do a business license for the marijuana as we do for the other.
You cannot use the same pricing structure as you do under other types of businesses.
And that's from the states?
It's because how these businesses were established and the licensing scheme and the way that the licensing and the maximum amounts that have been established in the constitutional amendment.
Okay. But now this business license also needs to account for the inspections that are required?
That's
or
right.
can they be charged separate for those inspections so that we could lower the business license and then charge them for each inspection? Assuming that they're actually making money by then, or
I think we were trying to provide, make it more simple and provide more certainty to the applicant as opposed to have this kind of variable fee and
okay.
have to put in, normally we would then require a deposit and then we would give you back your money. It is a much more complicated, if we do it that way, it's much more complicated.
We're trying to streamline this a little bit. But the expectation is that this business license then would also take care of the time it would take for the city to inspect these businesses as required by law?
Yes.
It's 6 facilities, right?
No. Yes. No, 2 dispensaries, 4.
I'm just trying to demonstrate the level of inspections, like how many you would have to have.
Like so at the end of the day, what we're talking about right now is $6,000. Yeah.
Okay. So, Mr. Foster.
Well, and I did ask this question. Essentially, all 3 of these bills are intended to put us in alignment with state statutes, right? And the only thing that's outstanding then is at what level we're going to set business licenses for these micro businesses in Columbia, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so the goal of the whole thing is to make way for to make opportunity for however they're defined, underrepresented or marginalized folks within the community to establish businesses in this area in particular. So, you know, Nick, I think, you know, your question about the fee, the question would be, is this fee a barrier to them being able to do exactly what this is intended to do? And I don't know that I have the answer to that and how much, at what level that becomes a significant or a limiting barrier. And I don't know how to determine that, but in terms of, I mean, I would support lowering it. I don't know at what level to put it.
So the mechanism to do that is in this particular, in the subsection F, and once you determine your number, you would make an amendment mm-hmm. to change that.
Subsection F of which bill?
Of, I'm sorry, the bill 142-23.
Okay.
And so right now we have it at $1,000. So, and it's $500 for the renewal. So what if we just say $500 for the application, $500 for the renewal? And
that's
that
what I had in mind. But
yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it sounds
okay.
like we're of one
yeah.
mind.
Okay. Yep. Yeah.
So may I recommend at this stage that we start taking these up in order as they are on the agenda, as opposed to kind of jumping back and forth, just to keep you on target. Mm-hmm. And the first one on your agenda is
Bill 142-23, which is Chapter 13.
Oh, thank you. So you were taking them up in order.
Dr. Peters wanted to say something.
I just wondered, so if it costs us more than $500 to do these inspections, since we're in the budget area, where relevant. Does that money come from? Are we going to pull that out of the general fund, or are we just going to...
Well, it's just a general fund activity.
Yeah, it's just a general fund expense, so it would be absorbed just with all the other processes for business licenses.
Okay.
I'm thinking about the tax revenue mm-hmm. that we're mm-hmm. going to receive.
Which I think will be more than $500.
Which will be more than $500.
Absolutely.
All right.
So if we were to amend, it would be amending Chapter 13, correct?
Yes, it would be Section 13-424, subsection F, and you would amend it. You would amend the $1,000 down to $500.
Do I need to say exactly that?
No, you can just say so moved.
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Foster seconds. All in favor of the amendment to the Bill 14223? Say aye.
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 Any opposition? No. Okay. Do you guys have any more discussion on this, or are we good to call the roll? Sheila, can you call the roll on B-14223 as amended?
Yes. Council Bill 14223 as amended, Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
And moving on to 14323, do we have any more discussion on that, or are we good to vote?
Good to go.
Good to vote.
Sheila, 14323.
Council Bill 14323, Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Any further discussion on 14423? All right, Sheila, go for it.
Council Bill 14423, Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Okay. We're getting stuff done tonight, y'all. Moving on to the consent agenda. Sheila, can you read the items on the consent agenda twice and call the roll?
Yes. Items on the consent agenda include Bills 14823, 14923, 15023, 15123, 15223, 15523, 15423, 15523, and Resolutions 10223, 10323, 10423, 10523, 10623, 10723, 10823, 10923, 10923, and 11023. Bills 14823, 14923, 15023, 15123, 15223, 15523, 15423, 15523, and Resolutions 10223, 10323, 10423, 10523, 10623, 10723, 10823, 10923, 10923, and 11023. Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Moving on, we do not have any new business tonight, so we can go to introduction and first reading. Sheila, do you need a drink before you read everything?
We'll see if I can make it through.
Okay, if you go ahead and read the items for intro and first reading. Thank you.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 15623, 15723, 15823, 15923, 16023, 16123, 16123, 16223, 16423, 16523, 16523, 16523, 16623, 16623, 16723, 16823, 16923, 16923, 16123, 16123, 17523, 17623, 17723, 17823, 17923, 17923, and 18023, first reading.
All right, let's go to our report section of the agenda. First, we have a report from the Loop CID on the FY24 annual budget. It's for informational purposes only, unless we have anybody from the Loop CID who wants to speak on it. Okay. We'll move to report 3623, which is correspondence from the Board of Health regarding opioid settlement funds. I don't know if Stephanie's here and wants to speak on that or not, but also for informational purposes.
I think that was just it. It's just for informational purposes.
Okay. Perfect. Report 3723 is a budget billing adjustment based on electric rates increase. Do we have a staff report on that one?
I would just say that at our June 20th meeting, Councilman Waterman asked if it'd be possible to adjust budget billing for those that have budget billing due to the electric rate increase. We've reviewed our ordinances and we can do that. So the thing that I'm lacking in here is that I didn't say we were going to contact those folks via letter unless we hear some negative feedback from you about doing this, and then anybody who requests it, we'd be happy to do.
Satisfy your question?
I'm good.
Okay. Dr. Peters?
So they would not do it automatically. You have to contact them. They have to say, yes, please add that $6 a month. Otherwise, it just comes up as an adjustment at the end of the year or the end of the
budget. Yeah, it comes up in the spring when we do the settle up, and then it would be carried forward for the next 12 months.
It would be a manual process, so that's why we're...
That's why you would wait, unless you ask.
We're allowing the customers to choose if they want us to go ahead and adjust it. It would be a manual adjustment.
But that will be about 8 months then? So about $50, $60?
How many budget billing customers do we have?
About 2,900, just under 3,000.
Additional questions, comments? Thank you. We'll go on to report 3823, water and electric financial information. Oh, look, you guys are still here.
Yeah, so at the June 20th meeting, Mayor Buffalo asked if we could provide information about our restricted cash balances, and so that's what this report has in it. We'd be happy to try to answer questions about it.
That was a for informational
it's
use
informational,
only.
Yeah.
Okay. That was primarily for Barbara, so I'm assuming she's got it and can dig in where she needs to. Thank you, guys. So we'll move on to report 3923, the Community Foundation of Central Missouri 2023 report. I see John Baker here. Hello.
And I love this time of night. This is very different.
It's light outside.
Delighted. I'm happy to provide this annual report to the City Council about the Community Foundation of Central Missouri for 2022. This has been both a great and a challenging year at the same time. And I apologize to the Council for the tardiness of this report, but it really couldn't be helped. We were forced in the middle of 2022 to seek new back office and investment partners, and this carried over through the first quarter of 2023. The process itself was a very steep challenge, and forces beyond our control meant that it wasn't until May that we had firm end-of-year 2022 figures to share with you, which are found inside the extended packet. The city manager wisely wanted to keep us on a timely track, so he allowed my submission in the month of March of a preliminary report minus the end of year 2022 figures, which were later supplied, and you can see them. This year, our financials and other information have gotten to the point where it was recommended that I also submit a council memo with highlights of the materials in the larger report that I provide. And I hope that you read that and you found that material information, that information helpful and logically presented and accessible to you. Tonight, by the way, is my and the Community Foundation's fifth and potentially final report in what was our initial agreed upon 5-year agreement between the city and the Community Foundation. That agreement sunsets this September 30. There is a high probability that I will soon submit another council memo seeking at least a 1-year extension to the former agreement's terms. So I'm just kind of putting that out there before you in case. I sincerely hope that the city has been proud to be part of giving life and sustenance to a new, significant charitable giving enterprise, the Community Foundation of Central Missouri. And with those opening remarks, I will open it to you to make or ask any questions that you might have at this time.
Do you have any questions for Mr. Baker? Mr. Foster.
John, can you tell me a couple of things about the foundation and the city specifically? That is, for instance, how many of the Como Gives nonprofits are located in the city? Of the total that participated, how many of them are located in the
so
city?
So the city has the Parks and Recreation Fund. It has the Office of Cultural Affairs, which is called the Columbia Arts Fund. We have another fund, which is called the Conley Fund for Public Health and Human Services, but they are not in Como Gives. And then this year, for the first time, Public Health and Human Services has requested from the New Century Fund, which I also oversee, that the New Century Fund be a fiscal agent or a fiscal sponsor to pay the participation fee for the new utilities assistance program to be in Como Gives. And everyone has said yes, and it's all it's directing that way. Steve Hollis will be our main contact for that participation.
Well, I know you have a number of nonprofits in the city who participate. Do you have an idea of how many of those are?
Oh, I thought you were talking about city departments.
Well, that what you just said actually was helpful, but I'm wondering about the number of nonprofits that are.
We're going to have 171 nonprofits in Como Gives this year. 171. The vast majority of those are Columbia, but we do have a few from Jefferson City, Mexico, Moberly this year for the first time, and Fulton.
And do you have an idea about, in terms of your disbursements, how much of that was distributed within the city?
Not without making up numbers.
You'd have to go look it up, yeah. Well, don't make up any numbers.
Not without making up numbers. A Parks and Rec usually, you know, comes around 10,000. I don't know what utilities assistance will do. This will be their first time. Columbia Arts Fund, between 3 and 8, depends on the year.
Okay.
1,000. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Questions for Mr. Baker? Thanks, John.
All right. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Moving on to report 4023 is our monthly finance report. I see Matthew and Jim. Welcome. You guys match today.
Unintentionally.
I like it. It's good. Good vibe.
Mine's the dress alike.
So, in the finance report today, we did want to just make mention of the cash balances that we had, since there was a lot of conversation about that. And so what we have is sort of a PowerPoint of the document that was attached to the agenda. And so we'll just go over the four different breakdowns of cash really quick.
Yeah, so basically we got, we just put them into kind of three broad buckets: operating cash, restricted cash, and capital projects. Operating cash obviously covers your basic day-to-day operations. Restricted cash means there's some level of restriction we placed on it personally, or is placed on it by law, and then capital projects, or is money put away for various capital projects. And then this is our operating cash and kind of a breakdown from the various fund types that we have within the city. The only thing I would really point out is the internal service fund had a big decrease this decrease you're seeing on the screen is mostly from timing issues. Usually it's a little higher than that, but everything else it should be accurate. And kind of what you're seeing is that we've had a decent amount of increase in the general fund, mainly due to taxes sales tax increases that have come in over the last few years. And that's pretty much the only major change in that category. And then with restricted cash, the only thing I'd like to point out is you kind of see an ebb and flow with this one, like our debt obligations. That's all the money we put aside for bond payments. And what you usually see with that is as we get closer to the end of the fiscal year, that tends to grow and then it'll decrease. And then we kind of build that back up. The other thing, internal reserve, it's kind of a bucket we kind of created for ourselves. Most of that money is closure, post-closure, which is something we have to do for the landfill to keep a kind of reserve amount in case we have to close a landfill cell. And then the next section, this is titled Restricted Cash, but this is our capital projects. But this kind of what you usually see here is a big buildup at the beginning of the fiscal year and then a slow kind of decrease as we get closer to spring and then summer when we start to actually spend down or start to our capital majority of our capital projects start up. So we kind of want to show is there's an ebb and flow to our cash. You know, it tends to increase during the beginning of the year when we certain funds increase at the beginning of the year when we put money aside for capital projects. Other funds, you know, we get a lot of property tax at a certain time, so that kind of starts in January for our operating cash and general fund. And we're happy to answer any questions you guys might have on this.
Questions? Mr. Foster.
I probably should have seen this to ask before, but under restricted cash, personal development, can you say what
that is? This is capital, it's mistitled. That's my mistake. But personal development, go ahead.
Yeah, that's mostly it's parks and rec projects is what those are. It's just it's a kind of an older term that we've kept. Well, it's in our system, so we kind of have to use it for reporting purposes, but really it's just our Parks and Rec projects. And that's so high because we have moved Rec Services, it was its own category, we moved it into Parks and Rec, so you see that big increase year-to-date change. It was largely due to us moving all those Rec Service projects into kind of the government projects.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Other council questions or comments on this one? Okay. We still have you all for Report 4123, which is an amendment to the FY23 annual budget interdepartmental transfer of funds.
Any questions? We can answer those while we're here as well.
Any questions? Nope. All right. You're free, Matthew and Jim. Thank you.
Thank you.
Flip my script here. Next, we're to the part of our agenda for general comments of the public, council, and staff. So if anyone from the public would like to speak, please make your way to the microphone. Dr. Gardner, hello. Sorry we missed you earlier.
Me too. Carrie Gartner, 14 Business Loop East. Tonight I learned that council can get through the consent agenda faster than the lights on Broadway will change. So I submitted my budget to you. So please, I can answer any questions that you happen to have about that.
Did anyone have any questions about the Loop CID budget?
Thought I'd ask. Thank you all.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
I'm happy to know how the lights change, though.
Yes, how quickly they are. Any other public comment? Just get here safely. That's all.
Chris Jones, Second Ward. So ABC 17 came out with a report earlier this weekend, and in it we find out that the city will not be pressing charges against the two officers who violently beat up a community member. Now, the reason why they will not be beating up the community member, according to ABC 17, is because that the Columbia Police Department, they decided to hand off the investigation to the Boone County Sheriff's Department, which is common. And the Boone County Sheriff's Department decided not to list an article of intent or whatever you said.
Probable cause.
Sorry. I had it pulled up and then I didn't. They decided not to list a probable cause statement. Therefore, the grand jury could not do an indictment. I, among many community members, am very disappointed, and I would like to encourage you to put pressure upon those that be to, again, try to file these reports, because if we do not go after these two officers who violently beat up a community member after they did not identify themselves as police officers, what happened was these two police officers were called to Harpo's, and within seconds of them arriving, they immediately start tasing, macing, and beating up a single person. One officer held him down, and the other officer violently beat him up, so much so that he needed to go to the emergency room. This is not something that we want to happen by our police department. And yet, whenever our police department does not file charges against whenever our prosecuting attorney does not file charges against their police officers, why in the world should the community obey the police department when the police department cannot even follow their own ordinances, their own rules? Because not only did they violate their own code of conduct, but they also violated PERF standards. PERF is what governs them as a whole on the national level, and I want to highly encourage you to put pressure. Thank you.
Any other public comment at the end of the meeting? Okay. That's okay. Hello, Eugene.
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Range Line, two or three different areas. I sometimes, over these many years, have asked questions, and we know there's a protocol. So if there's any way, I know some of you are new on this, why can't you directly ask staff for answers to what questions might be presented through the meeting and get an answer? Because we often hear how they don't have the trust in their city council. It could be as simple as, they didn't do that, so I hate them people. What? It would really help to have true communications. And where to put it in the meeting? Let's do it right after public comments. Why not? Start something new and different when it comes to getting answers to different situations. I hate to bring this up, but now that I've been told right to my face, we're well aware that through all the homeless situation, I had to come up here and repeat something to the effect that HUD would be looking at you, Betsy. That's just a statement. Next, I've never talked about this. Choose not to. But tonight, I don't believe we can have someone just making up some wild stories when I decided to believe the person. They say they are the sixth position from the United States president. They live among our homeless. The next person I'm referring to just this past week says he's been sent here from Chicago to inspect how the homeless are treated. These things are getting serious. What is Eugene talking about? What is the ultimate goal? When I hear this and think back to all these years of trying to problem solve the homelessness, Mr. DeCarlin was able to step up, see that the shelter's going forward, and as far as I know, we're getting showers. Hope to move the loaves and fishes, and hopefully have a stable setting. But if we have persons among our homeless that can talk about having storage units, and then some of them are gold, what? Not everybody can say these kind of things off the cuff and me to believe half of anything they say. This guy is real. How did the extra $5 million in our budget, or our total assets, where did that other million come from? And I did not like seeing the police situation being overlooked. I'm gonna say, just repeat information, Chris Jones, what she just talked about. That's pretty sad, because this town could have been torn apart. God bless.
Thank you, Eugene. Hi, Renee.
Renee Carter, I'm representing Race Matters Friends.
Would you like your 5 minutes?
I probably won't need it, but just in case I get blabby, I don't think I will tonight. I only have a couple of things. One is I wanted to follow up about what Chris was talking about. And just to let you know, I've made contact with the commissioners, Boone County commissioners, to let them know that the sheriff's supervisor needs to make sure that when he does his job, that he does it in a thorough way from now on, so that there's at least some statement about what his investigation rendered. Because at this point, there's nothing else left to be done. And those officers will be able to go on and serve other communities. And so next time, it might be someone's life that's So we need to make sure we do thorough investigations. But on a happier note, Chris and I attended the CPRB meeting last week, and both of us were very complimentary of particularly the chair, Reese Ellis, for his leadership and his thoroughness in the coverage of SB 189 and how it will affect the Citizens Review Board if either the governor's veto is overturned or you know, the legislators decide that they're going to put together another package on that and send it through. We were very impressed by how knowledgeable he is about legislation, and I think he is in a good position on the CPRB to lead. People listen to him, and he educates them very well, and so I think he is doing a wonderful job. And also Doug Hunt for making sure that there are some changes to be made to the process of how people can be notified of their complaint. They want to broaden that and extend some of the deadlines to make sure that people who don't have a typical way of being reached, or maybe their addresses change or their phones get shut off, that there's multiple ways to get a hold of them, and to also be able to ensure that those people who are either in jail or institutionalized, because sometimes when you send an email or a letter to an institution or a jail, it has to go through a whole process before that person even gets that piece of mail or information. And so I thought that was very thoughtful of him to think about how can we make this board better for our citizens. And so, anyway, I just wanted to say that after all the turmoil that board's gone through, the current board seems to be better job, and they seem to be dedicated to the citizens and making it a better place. Thank you.
Any other public comment? Okay, we'll move on to council comment. Mr. Knoth, you're up first.
I got nothing.
Mr. Lovelady?
Nothing.
Y'all. Okay. Mr. Foster. I can count on you.
Yeah, you can always count on me. Yeah. Just, I want to say two forms of thanks. One to the Mayor Pro Tem for ably leading us tonight. And second to Jeff Jones. In the process of hearing from the consultant, it was pointed out that that position is a very lonely one. And I can certainly imagine that's true. There are others. But that is certain that could be considered very lonely, but that's certainly one of them. So I just want to say, and the consultant recommended that we thank Chief Jones for his service. So I just want to take a moment to, I know we did this earlier, but I just want to reaffirm thanks to the chief for his work through the years and his dedication to the community.
Mr. Waterman?
I'll second what Nick Foster just said about thanking Chief Jones for his service to the community, his dedication to the community. It's, I'm going to say, almost uncommon today, so especially in that position. And, yes, I know that's been a very lonely position, so thank you, Chief Jones. And along that line with the process we're going through to select a new chief, I know they've had one public hearing about that. I don't know if there's another one scheduled, or is it just continued meetings with stakeholders? You know what that is, Mr. Seawood?
Yeah, so right now the process is just to put together our advertisement for okay. the brochure. So this initial conversations was just for that. So we actually want to say we had 9 public meetings. 3 were in person, the rest were virtual, but the idea is to try to talk to community members to see exactly what they're looking for in a chief to help us put together the advertisement for the next chief. Now, once we advertise and we actually start getting resumes in and start reviewing resumes, there will be additional opportunities for the public to weigh in.
Okay, well, thank you. So just, I would just encourage everyone to stay informed, stay involved. If you haven't already had an opportunity to provide your input, I believe the Be Heard survey is still available.
The Be Heard survey will be available up until we're doing the final interviews.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Peters?
I have a question about the Central City Unified Development Code.
Yes.
Process, where we are.
So right now we're in the process of finishing up the contract with H3. That's the consulting firm that will be doing it. The big hang up was on their insurance to make sure it aligns with what we're requiring for all our vendors for insurance purposes. So hopefully that'll get wrapped up and then we'll be able to go into sign the contract with them and they can start the work.
Okay. And then I would like to third, I guess, or fourth, however many people have already thanked Chief Jones for his service and dedication. I know it's been a rocky road. I think he's done a good job. That's all I got.
I don't really have anything either. I was going to thank staff for a really robust discussion about our budget on Saturday. So if the public hasn't had the opportunity to check out the discussion around the budget, it was available online and you can check that out and see what's coming ahead. And I look forward to talking more about that and continuing to make the case for paid family leave. That's all I have. Do we have any comment from staff?
Not a whole lot. Just want to kind of reiterate the discussion about the budget and about the police chief process. You know, we are making sure that we have everything on beheard.como.gov. If you want to follow, utilize that website to do that. When we get the brochure for the police chief, that'll be up. As we move forward, if there's opportunity for the public comments, those all will be on Be Heard so people will know exactly what's going on. Same thing with the budget process. The budget's on Be Heard. If there's any questions or comments, please utilize that in order to give it to us. And the first public hearing for the budget will be at the next council meeting.
Do you have anything?
I've got nothing else for you tonight. Thanks.
Okay. Well, I'm giving you your evening back. You're welcome. We'll adjourn. Thank you for being here.